You've found the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Where There Is Hope. Does it feel like hope is easy for you personally? What about in the face of all of the big, even existential crises our society is facing? Let's take this time to cultivate a curiosity about hope and together try to see where there is hope.
Hi, my name is Katie Kennedy, and I am going to tell you a little story of hope that I witnessed. So my son Elliot, he's a senior at South High School. He's on the varsity team for baseball. And his team was playing Richfield High School at the Richfield Diamond. And it was a night game, so the lights were on. And the game was 8-6 in the fifth inning, and South was winning. Really fun evening game. And suddenly at 10 o'clock, the lights go out. They were on a timer. And it took about 30 minutes for them to figure out how to turn the lights back on. So in the meantime, the two teams by their own dugouts kind of were entertaining themselves, balancing baseball bats on their faces and running the bases shirtless and cartwheels and flips and enjoying themselves. And then the South team went out to the middle of the field and started playing Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. And that was really fun to watch, joyful, you know, being playful. And then the Richfield team bolts out toward the circle. And this was my favorite part. The South team scoots back on their butts to allow for room in the circle. For the Richfield team, and they kind of interspersed all together and started playing together, playing Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. And it was just a joyful thing to watch, and the parents all in the stands were watching and smiling and taking pictures and commenting on how great it was. And then there was one guy right behind me says, now that the Richfield team, you know, is playing, they're going to just focus on their own team, choosing their own teammates. And I kind of went, you know, like, that wasn't awesome to hear, but that did not happen. They continued to, you know, mix it up and choose each other. And he was wrong, and he actually admitted, oh, I was wrong. I feel like experiences like this that bring joy and laughter and delight make room for hope. And that's what it did for me that evening. So, thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Melissa Locke, and here with Greg this morning, and here with these wonderful stories of hope. We've been talking about hope for 5 weeks, and we pretty much have it all figured out, so it's just time to tell stories. Just kidding. Hope is a struggle, and we've been exploring all these parts of hope and how it needs to start with honesty and how it's a choice that we make or a mode that we practice, and sometimes that feels like you're practicing trudging uphill, and sometimes it feels like you see these kids on a baseball field, and it's like, ah, oh, I can feel hopeful right now. It's like going downhill. So we've been exploring all of the hard, how it's hard to hope, and what's been revelatory for me is that you can even feel unhopeful or hopeless, but you can still practice hope. And we can do that together. And that is one reason I'm grateful for this community and moments to pause and practice together. And Katie's story and that picture of the kids that playing Duck, Duck, Gray Duck, it's such a great illustration of one of the things about hope that we've been talking about and how it's so infectious, right? And when, like, you could see her body when the guy behind her was like, well, now they're going to just choose their own teammates. And she was like, yeah.
Buzzkill.
So that's infectious too. But the hope helps us breathe. It, like, creates more hope. And I have seen, I've just, my eyes have been like a lot more alert to how that is so true.
Yeah, you know, so both hope and cynicism are, in fact, it's like hope sees possibilities and what could happen, and cynicism says, you know, everything's bad and wrong and expect that. And I think they're both infectious. You probably know the expression, you are what you eat. I don't know if you eat hope or cynicism, but it's like what you consume. Do you open yourself up to experiences and look for things that look hopeful? Or are you always looking for what's wrong and why things aren't going to work? I think, you know, you become what you eat, and that's something mm-hmm. you probably don't want to do. And hope and cynicism are not only infectious, they're also self-fulfilling. Cynicism says, like I said in the promo, you know, cynicism says it's really not worth the effort and therefore expends no effort and reaps the benefits of its non-labor, right? You know, so nothing ever happens of it. Whereas hope looks out and says, well, something's got to be possible, and looks like, what could we do? What could be invented? What could be transformed? What could be reborn? And then goes and tries to do it and, you know, and makes that happen. So, you know, they both tend to be self-fulfilling.
Yeah, and so then when we whatever we're seeing with and choosing to look at and land on, that is what gets created. We create the world that we see.
Yeah, if you see possibilities, then you work towards those possibilities. If you see none, then you work on just letting it fall apart. I mean, just think. So this is the week of George Floyd's murder on Chicago Avenue, just up the street here a little bit, and thousands of people turned out after that. They didn't turn out because they thought nothing could change. They knew things had to change, but they also believed they could, and so they came out because they had hopes. They believed. They saw a world that could be different, and they came out to create that. And it's going to take a lot of creating. It's far from done. We know that. This is probably one of those generational hope things we talked about last week, but we're doing it.
And that, I mean, remember thinking about that generational, that long haul, like, no, this, it feels like it should be better than it is yeah. right now, and it feels like we're trudging on a lot of things. And so thinking about how we travel as people of hope, as people who see hope and try to create that world, we're talking about, like, what do we carry along for that? So it's not a formula or a recipe, but maybe we can help fill our backpacks, right, for this journey, for this trying to hold on to hope with some stuff that can help us.
Right. Yeah. You know, hope isn't sort of thing like step one, step two, step yeah. three, or, you know, following a recipe to make your beef bourguignon or that stuff. You know, that's not the right name. But but it's the stuff you carry with you that you be prepared with. And so we're going to be sharing stories of hope this morning with you from various people. And I just kind of like looking at them like, well, so what is that piece that's in my backpack, you know, that I carry along that story witnessed to? And if you think back to Katie's that we watched just a minute ago, she was talking about that joy and laughter. And the truth is that joy and laughter are real. They aren't just like numbing, oh, let's put the bad stuff out of mind so that I get a break. They kind of do that, but they do it in a way that refreshes. Like she said, it makes space. It gives you breathing room. And all of a sudden, hope is able to live. You know, we carry so much weight, so much heavy stuff around us, and that joy, that laughter that is so true about human beings and who we can be together, you know, just gives us room, or like it says on the outline, it allows hope to take root and gives it a place to grow. So that's important stuff.
So our kids have been wrestling with hope too during these weeks, all of them in different ways and amazing ways. And I hope you've had a chance to talk to some of the kids about that, because they have a lot to say to us and teach us. And actually, speaking of that, the middle school kids made some hope videos for us to help us out. Speaking of laughter, so let's see one of those.
Hey everybody, it's Safari Sam here, and today we are looking for the elusive hope. Hope is so hard to find these days, and I thought, you know where we're gonna find some hope? In a middle school. Come on, let's go find some hope.
St. Martin saw something strange. A little leaping lemur who liked to bounce and play. They followed their new bouncing friend, not knowing where this adventure would end.
I can't believe I don't get to be an orchestra.
Why, you're still coming to the fundraiser next week?
Yeah, but that's not playing. That's not like being part of it.
Yes, it is. Remember, we need your cupcakes. That's the whole reason we have it. We need new bandstands. Or just stands.
Well, but what about everybody else? Well, they won't accept me anymore.
That's not true. You're still coming to the sleepover this weekend.
Yeah, I am. Thanks, Grace.
Well, there you have it. Hope in a middle school. When you're feeling alone because you have a broken arm, turns out going to a sleepover and remembering your community is a great solution, an antidote to feeling alone. Come again next week. Bye!
Where are they going? I don't know. I'm gonna get there. Come on, let's go. Me and you.
Woohoo!
And
all right.
Come along and see what's the...
Thank you, middle schoolers. Now we'll have that song in our heads. Remembering your community, though. So that reminded me of a thing I read, that there was a study where they had people looking at a hill that they had to, and they were going to have to climb up it carrying something. And if the people were, they asked them, how steep do you think the hill is? And if the people were looking at the hill by themselves, they would rate it as much steeper than the people who were looking at it with a group of people that they were going to walk up with. So, remembering our community. And we have another story about how do we remember our community? Sometimes even that feels hard.
I'm Chris Meyer, and I want to share a little story of hope. I think it was about a month ago, on one of those warm, sunny, end of April days, I headed out for a walk around Lake Nokomis. As I came up around the north side of the lake along the beach, I spied a guy who was sitting on this bench soaking up the late afternoon sun. Our eyes caught, and I knew that we were sharing the same moment. So I spread my arms out and said, "Isn't this sun glorious?" And he said, "It sure is." We smiled some more and waved, and I went on my way. This reminds me of another chance encounter I've had recently. I walk to Fabric on Sunday mornings, and as I come up to the top of the hill and cross Chicago Avenue, there's a lady who's waiting at the bus stop. The first time I passed her and noticed her, we caught each other's eyes and nodded and smiled. The next Sunday when she was there, I waved at her, and she waved back at me, and we smiled. The third time was a cooler day. She was standing there in a bright red coat. There was a roller suitcase next to her. She was waiting. I crossed over the street closer to her. We smiled, and I said, "Hey, how's your day today?" And she said, "Great. How is yours?" And I said, "It's going great, too." And he said, "Have a good one." And I left and went on my way, and she waited for her bus. Both of these chance encounters got me thinking a little bit about connection. How, if these are ordinary, regular instances that everybody has, we all run into people, smile, catch their eye, nod, whatever. And if we can find these little connections around these small moments in our lives, what kind of connections can we make if we really look for them that will help us work through some of the more difficult problems that we're trying to work on together as a community? That's what gives me hope.
All these fun little stories, a couple of like takeaways from that story, talking to Chris about it. One is that sometimes hope doesn't work because we hope there wouldn't be any airplanes and that the street sweeper would leave the parking lot. And neither of those came true. But some of the more important things were there. You know, and I think, you know, to kind of, there's a lot of stuff there, but kind of the little takeaway, and that's on your outline, is that remember that the building blocks of human connection, and therefore human cooperation, right? Human connection leads to human cooperation, are both easy and they're common. I mean, those experiences she had, she doesn't know these people, she doesn't necessarily want to have a friendship, but how easy it was and how normal it was to be able to have that basic thing of, that basic step of understanding and like, yeah, you know, we can enjoy being part of the same world together. I think that's so important. In fact, one of the things that, in talking with her about it, that we both realized, like, that realization lets us know what is the first step. If you've got someone that you think it's going to be really hard to see eye to eye or to make progress on an issue, what does it tell you? Does it tell you to go to the issue, or does it tell you to go over to those basic places of human connection where cooperation leads from that are really easy and common? And those are available to us. And you know, first steps need to and can stop there, start there. Anyway, that's one of the things that our kids were talking about is how we figure out what our next steps are. So let's see a little bit more from our middle school kids.
Hope is very hard to find, but today we are going to be trying to find hope in a middle school.
While walking in the woods one day, Chris and Martin saw something strange. A little leaping lemur who liked to bounce and play. They followed their new bouncing.
I've been feeling sad lately because I've been being bullied. And I don't know what to do because I'm feeling stuck. What should I do, Dr. Noodle? I need some advice to help me deal with these bullies. Because they're bothering me every day, and I think I've tried everything, but I don't really know how to, like, deal with them. So what should I do? What are some next steps I should take? Okay. I guess, you know, I could do things that remind me of how great I am, like jumping. So should I start jumping? Or like, will jumping make the bullies go away?
Dr. Noodle is a little strange, but he was right on some things. Imagining your next step is a great way to help yourself have hope.
Me and you and Savannah.
So not only is it easy to, you know, find human connection, but all you have to do is jump, and it can help you find your next step. But there is something to moving our bodies, right?
Well, and there's something, I mean, as silly as that is, first steps are often like almost like throwaways. They just start momentum, right?
It's what they begin. But deciding to take it can be so big. Yeah. So that's why this next story, we need these things in our backpack to help us pause and remember. So here's another one to add to your collection.
Yeah.
About to help you get those next steps.
Good morning. I'm Tammy Trell's dad. Last year in May 2021, our family was out in California in Santa Maria attending the funeral of my father-in-law who had passed away the previous month. And this was a year into the pandemic, and this was our first trip, really traveling anywhere and being together as a family. And it was sort of a nerve-wracking time. It was just, we all had masks on and we're keeping our distance from each other. And we got out of the car to go into the church for the service. And my son got out of the car, and as we were walking into the church, my son walked around, and the first thing he did is he went up to join his grandmother, and he put his arm around her and walked with her into the church. And at the time, it just struck me, and I hadn't even planned on taking any photos. I didn't have my phone in my hand. It was in my purse. And I quickly grabbed it and took a photo with my son walking his grandmother into the memorial service for her husband of 62 years. And looking back, you know, a year later, in thinking about hope, when Greg was asking for stories or images, and that was the first thing that came to my mind, that image of my son walking with his grandmother, just so tenderly, and I felt like so disconnected. We weren't like really touching each other, and I don't even think I hugged my mother-in-law. And to see my son so tenderly just go up with her, be with her, sit with her, and have her lean into him was just hopeful for me, and that we can get to a time when this pandemic's behind us that we can be together and be with each other and provide those touches and hugs that are so important in our lives.
she lost track of that, that we might ever be able to be together physically, like, and not worry about touching one another and being close, and that
that world of fear had built up in her, and she wasn't hardly even aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You posted that question, and Tammy responded right away, right?
That's on actually Facebook. One of the really interesting things about it, because I put a post on Facebook and said, "Tell me your story of hope," and she doesn't normally go on Facebook, but she happened to, and she saw that, and she immediately, that picture she took just popped in her mind when she read that post, and she had to think, like, why? She didn't really have that automatic connection, but it was like instantaneously, even though it was a year ago, and she had kind of forgotten about it. Obviously, there's something unconscious sitting in there. These messages, you know, you are what you eat. And she had consumed this hope, and it was there, and it was working, and was waiting to be expressed and shared. So when I asked her, say, "Do you want to? Can you tell that story?" She was like, "Yes, can I?" It's
and just
exciting.
In telling you, I bet, and noting it in her head. So that's the next fill-in. That take care to note and remember the things that show you that what you fear, whatever it is, isn't true, because they're there somewhere. And she wasn't even planning to take a picture, right? But the picture came back to her mind. She was able to find it and share it with you and tell you about it. So just landing on those memories that help us hold hope is a tool to carry along.
So one of the things is, like, so how do we create narratives of hope for ourselves? Because we all are facing problems, and we've got the big global societal ones, we have our own personal ones. There's some that are really big and some that aren't so big. But in doing a lot of this and just kind of looking through, how hope works in our lives is, well, the first is, you know, it's really to tell the truth. Tell the truth. Be honest. We've talked about that a couple of weeks. Be honest what the real situation is. There's a guy named Waharji Ali who talks about this really well, too. But it's like, you know, pick out the problem. What is the thing that's causing this worry, this thing that needs hope brought to it? And what are all the possible outcomes that could happen? All right, maybe I just make up one. Like, okay, so you're miserable in your job. The relationships are horrible. You're worried about your status there and so on. And, you know, just doing it isn't good. So, you know, what are the possible outcomes? Well, one is no one likes you there, and you're going to find out you're fired, and then you're going to have to go home and tell your family, "I just got fired from my job. We're probably going to lose our house." And, you know, so that's one, right? Yeah. Play that out. That's fine. And what are some other outcomes? Well, I'm just going to have to gut it out. I'm going to stay in this job, and I'm going to hate it, but I'm going to do it day after day, and I'm just going to try to, you know, forget it when I go home. That's a fun one, too. Maybe they're all going to realize that I'm right, and my boss, my supervisor, is just totally screwed up, and they're going to make me CEO, in fact, change the name of the company and name it after me because I am so fantastic, all right? Yeah, probably not that one either. I'm going to go find a better job. I'm going to quit this job. I'm going to find a better job. Yeah, I really like this job. I mean, potentially, is this really important? Like, this is what I wanted to do. So I don't really want to go there. Well, what about? So I'm going to invest in relationships. I'm going to figure out how can I rebuild trust? How can I start communication with the people I'm having trouble with? How can I work, you know, within people to just incrementally get there? Anyway, pick the story, pick the scenario of all the possible outcomes. It's good to look at them. It's good to face them, to name them, to know that they're out there, right? Because you kind of need to emotionally prepare yourself for that, because it may go anywhere, but any direction. But choose the one that you want and then invest in that. Invest in that story. Invest in that narrative. So how will I actually end up playing that out? And I think that's really one of the important things for us to do. And rather than just sit there with it all kind of milling around in our mind and it just becomes a worry thing that drains us of energy. But if we choose the one that we want to be true and we invest in that narrative, then it gives purpose to us. It lets our energy and our action, have some meaning. And when you find out, you know, the roadblocks, you start changing things. Think about Jesus. There's a line that I've said a couple of times. It's kind of like Jesus' mission statement, if there would have been such things back in those days. But it's in John chapter 10 where he says, "I have come that you may have life and you may have it abundantly." And I mean, it's like, that's the narrative of hope that Jesus chose. It sounds like just a nice, cool meme kind of saying, but if you think about what was going on in his life at this time, he's being hounded in all directions. He's demanded by all kinds of people. he really doesn't have much of a following that's supporting him, so life is probably just tough. And the Jewish leaders are just chasing him all over the place. They're critiquing him. They're trying to figure out how they're plotting against him. I mean, everything is falling apart. And so you can just imagine that he knows all the scenarios that could be there, and he chooses this one. He says, no, I'm here that others could have life and they could have it abundantly. And that's what I'm going to stick to. And actually, that's the one that ended up happening from his life. And I think that's important stuff. Mm. Melissa, you've got a story of hope.
I do have a story. But it started with a story of feeling really like I was holding my breath. And it was in June 2020. Does anyone else remember June 2020? So we were a couple months into the pandemic, and everything was different already. And like Tammy, like we were wondering, would we ever be able to go to the grocery store, you know,
would
go to work again?
Would there be anything in the grocery store?
Would there be toilet paper? I mean, just so many things felt upside down, and like we were on alert all the time. And then George Floyd was murdered. And just the grief of that and the upheaval and the emotions that came along with that, I felt like, you know, just even being in our neighborhood was, we were going to the park and being guided into how to, you know, keep our backyard from being started on fire from people who are coming in from out of town. I mean, it was really like we were worried about our kids. Your daughter's house was next to the Walgreens. I mean, everything felt wrong, and I felt like I was holding my breath almost all the time. And then in early June, on maybe around the 13th or 14th, I got a postcard. And this is the postcard, and it has Minnehaha Falls on it. So that was the first thing I noticed. I was like, huh, Minnehaha Falls, that's still falling. I can remember that. And it's by a local artist, Adam Terman. And I want to read it to you. Here's what it said. Hello, neighbors. I started a new practice mid-pandemic. Mid-pandemic in June of 2020. It's my own PPP, the Pandemic Postcard Project. Recognizing the importance of connection when we're all being urged to stay apart. These past weeks have made it all the more important. Know how glad we are to be your neighbors and to share in the essential grace of community. Here's to calmer and more just days ahead. Peace. Mike. Well, Joe and I were like, oh my gosh, we love Mike and Margaret. They live down the block. They could have just called us or, you know, walked down the street and talked to us. But, oh, we loved getting this postcard. It felt like we could. It just reminded us what was right. And it felt so simple and so generous and so like there was nothing expected of us back. And it made us wonder, okay, what can we do? You know, how can we share that, some kind of simple act of connection with other people? And that was a time with at Fabric we were meeting virtually and trying to, you know, missing each other and trying to figure out how can we see each other again? And it just gave me a lot of chutzpah, I guess, to start wondering with the staff and be like, we can figure some stuff out. There's a lot we still can do. And so I needed that reminder. And then I would need it again. And then luckily, I got another one in July. And that was right after a pop-up concert. And he was saying how fun it was to see us when our band actually came to our block and played some music. Then I got another one. Here's in September. Now they're Mike's photos. October, December, went into the spring of 2021. The postcards are changing in these delightful ways. and May, October, and just recently I got another one. And here's what it says. Hope all is well up the block. Even though the PPP wrapped up last month, 2,366 cards to 323 people in 23 states and 4 other countries, I couldn't resist enlisting them for the greater good. So this is something that Mike really cares about. His mom has MS, and he was inviting us to be part of that bike race. So biking plus postcards, it's like all these things that Mike loves all in one, and I knew that, and it was just this another moment of delight and hope, and I was imagining, holy buckets, 2,366 cards. Think of the reverberations of that.
So what kind of person would do something like this?
Well, Greg, he's right here to tell us his story of hope. Nice lead, yeah. So, Margaret and Mike, some of my favorite people. I'm so excited for you to be here, Mike. So have a seat, and you can put your notes down if you want.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to have
you
here.
It's very nice to be here. Good morning, everyone.
Will you tell us your version of how did this start? Like, why did you do this?
Well, you know, as we look back to April of 2020, the pandemic was so new, and I did, when Melissa and I were talking about this, you know, couldn't help but point out how cute that was, that in June it was mid-pandemic of 2020. But I, you know, when I look back to what that those first weeks felt like, there was so much uncertainty and anxiousness, you know, anxiety. Where's this going? What's going to happen? Will we ever see anyone again? And fear too of what happens if we get that. That's when we were wiping down everything, every door handle, 17 times a day. And my situation was a little different because I was able to keep going into work every day. I work with St. Stephen's Human Services, and we provide services for people who are homeless. We run 2 shelters downtown. We have housing programs, street outreach. And much of our staff was working remotely then. The housing case managers weren't coming to the office. A lot of administrative people weren't coming into the office. But I got to go on my bike because there wasn't much I could do from home. You know, my job is such that I can't. And in some ways, I'm grateful for that because that gave me that continued routine of riding my bike up 21st Avenue, over the Greenway to Nicollet, down near 24th and Nicollet. And there was just a skeleton crew of us who were on site in the building, and all business was being transacted at the front door, you know, handing someone their mail or their representative payee check, or I would go outside and help people fill out for their U.S. birth certificates. And I had to learn that, oh, it's getting colder, I need to bring a different pen because ballpoint doesn't work well, I learned later, below 43 degrees.
Write that down.
Yeah, just
note
so you
self.
Know. And I would come, and I was grateful for that bike ride home because that let me kind of decompress, you know, what would I see the 2 deer who live at the cemetery on Lake Street, who I fondly refer to as Jane Doe and Joan Doe. Will I see them, and just these calm, you know, the nature part of that was helpful. But I get home and kind of recognizing that in some ways I had a good, that I got to maintain that routine of my day-to-day life. It was different, yes, but it wasn't drastically different. But what about others? How are they doing? You know, my family is all spread out across the country. And I kind of had this thought, you know, I've got this book of old baseball postcards, like baseball art, that I've had for 30 years. Well, what if I tore some of those out? And so I started sending some postcards to my mom in Ohio and siblings and other family and friends around the country. And, you know, just a handful.
You love baseball.
Yes.
And that was something you couldn't do. That
right.
changed, right?
Right, yeah. So I couldn't, so after I'd gone through that, book of postcards, I'm thinking, well, I'm kind of liking this idea of connecting with people who aren't able, don't have that luxury of going into the office every day or seeing one another. And so I kind of invested money I wasn't spending going to Twins games because there weren't any to go to. And so I started getting postcards from local artists like Adam Turman, Ricardo Levins Morales. I got a bunch from the Ray Gun Company in Des Moines, lots of funny Midwestern humor postcards. And then I started widening that circle of who else can I send them to? And, you know, some college friends, a friend of mine who I've known since first grade who now lives up in Bemidji. I started sending her cards. And this was also my way not just to support those local artists, but the post office. 40 cents at a time. Mm-hmm. Let me do what I can. And that was kind of the driving force of it. What can I do? What can I, you know, what little things? Those little things of saying hi to someone at a bus stop or those sort of things. And then it kind of developed into this practice. I never had a goal of I'm going to write
2,000.
Two cards a day, or five cards a day, or seven. No, it's just, who can I write to?
And then you weren't planning to write 2,300.
I had no idea. And the next year, I didn't know that it would keep going. But then, you know, once I was able to start going to baseball, we actually created a new PPP line item on the family budget. The Household Ways and Means Committee approved it for 2021. And I also started making my own cards.
Can you tell us about Postcard Hour?
Oh, it was the most wonderful thing. I would bike home, pull the bike in the garage, pull out the lawn chairs. We have a tuck-under garage, so our backyard is kind of dominated in one way by the driveway, but we've got beautiful beds on either sides of it, and crab apples, lilac. Who's loving Lilac Week this week? Yes, the perfume of the lilac just wafts up. And so I would sit out, I'd go in and get the postcard box and get a beverage and sit out back. And it worked out in those summer days to be an hour in the backyard. And writing postcards, I started making notes of who am I going to send the next one to, because, or they might like this one. And the locks, you know, Ev was playing baseball, and so let's get them one of the Target Field postcards. But it was my way, too, to share these beautiful places, my happy places, in this time when we still were staying apart. And that's where I kind of developed my own mission statement for it, of fostering connection, and it came to be coast to coast, with friends and family coast to coast, while we all stay apart for the greater good. So this was my way of sending my favorite places. There's lots of forest and hiking postcards. The Lake Superior is my dearly favorite place, and some baseball ones. And the great thing was it didn't stop with me sending these cards out. It wasn't just a one-way street. People started sending me postcards.
Yeah.
And I have a whole little folder full of, it's like that thick. And one of my favorites was someone did a watercolor based on a postcard I had sent him of three little cast iron skillets with cheese grits that I had put on the grill to get smoke on it. And so here's this one-of-a-kind postcard of a cast iron skillet with cheese grits in it.
Of your cast iron
skillets. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love that.
So it, you know, and how I came to the number of 2,366 cards. At some point early on, when I wasn't going to baseball games, I realized I wasn't able to keep my scorebook where I'm tracking what each batter does, little diamonds in this tiny
grid.
And
that was like your mindfulness practice for you, like a centering, yeah.
Right, and so I started, I kind of, you know, went back in time, I think so-and-so got this one. And then from going forward, I would make a note in my phone, in the notes app, of today these people got these postcards. And then at lunch the next day at work, I plug it into an Excel sheet, which is where I then added on which states everyone was from. And, oh, someone moved, so I have to switch Pennsylvania to Vermont.
So how is this all adding up to hope for you? Like, how was that hopeful for you?
You know, it was maintaining that connection with people and widening. You know, our circles were all getting smaller because we weren't seeing each other live and in person, and it doesn't feel the same when you're looking at a meeting on an iPhone and you see these squares and you can't see everyone all at once anyway. But it let me think about people and think about, you know, how far back we were friends. Some people became regular correspondents. It's like I had, you know, there was like at least seven pen pals who regularly were exchanging cards. And it just, that widening circle. And then they had their circles widened. And, you know, the reverberations, the ripples, one postcard and the water goes that much more. But my favorite comment was that someone who I had left St. Stephen's maybe 3 or 4 years ago, sometimes it feels like six because each COVID year feels like it's been at least two.
Yeah.
But it, maybe it was only 2 or 3 years ago, and she had moved up north. And she sent a postcard back, and on it, it was just like, this is so awesome. PPP was what I needed without even knowing that I needed it. And so just to, spread those ripples and that those connections that are so important to everything. Mm-hmm. And that's the hope, that and that calm of postcard hour. And it just all was not meant to be, but I'm glad that it came to be.
Because you saw something and you took a step.
And yes.
Yeah, I am so glad you did too. Yeah. And I'm so glad for all the work you do in the world. Thank you.
And thank you for inviting me this morning.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You were finding hope and you were spreading hope, and that's fantastic. I got a story to share, and I'm going to probably share it on Facebook for you all, so you'll find that there. But the middle schoolers have one more lesson about hope that they want to share with us right now. Well, almost right now.
I'm Safari Mia, and hope is hard to find. So today we're going to go find hope in a middle school. Let's go. You seem like you're having a lot of negative thoughts. I can't skydive because I'm not 18.
Have no fear, the power of yet is here.
What's that?
Power of yet lets you know that it's okay if you can't do these things. You just can't do them yet.
Okay. Now that he knows about the power of yet, he won't be hopeless when he can't do things right away. He has the power of yet.
Yes. So put that word in your backpack. Yet. Right?
That's right. It's great to see them to find playful ways of talking about the stuff, sharing the stuff that they've been learning.
I know. We do get those negative thoughts it just feels like change isn't possible, right? And it's always going to be, like this. Like, I can't quite see any other way.
In 2016, I took my very first road trip with a coworker. And as common as that is for a lot of people, a lot of families, we never did that kind of thing when I was growing up. And so, you know, I was 33 years old and this is the first time I had ever gone out west. And, you know, it really sparked a fire in me, and it lit something up in me that I never really knew that was there before. I mean, I had gone 33 years at that point, living life, and, you know, there's ups and downs, but for the most part, it was really just kind of floating through. And, you know, I struggled with depression a good part of that time in my life, most of my life. And so I was kind of just thinking, like, is this it? You know, up until that point, you know, is this it? Like, it's okay. I mean, I'll deal with it. I'll deal with these feelings of, like, just kind of being, but I kind of lost a lot of hope about, you know, ever finding true happiness. And so, you know, 2016 comes around and I finally make time to do this, and it really changed everything for me. I remember, like, we went from Minnesota to Yellowstone down through the Tetons and then into Utah. We went to Zion. We hit up all these parks, and we did it in 5 days. And so, like, just being able to see the landscape change so rapidly made me realize just how much is out there. And it's, like, so much bigger than the world that I knew. And I just, you know, driving into Yellowstone and seeing, like, all these trees and smelling the smells of the pines and, like, watching the geothermal features and the colors and the birds and the animals, and everything about it was just otherworldly to me. And from that point on, it's never been the same for me. And I took those feelings of hopefulness and this fire, and I brought it back home with me, you know, and I carry it with me everywhere now. And it really taught me to, like, just pay attention to what's around. And I don't know, it just, that's the thing. Like, that's the thing I'll always carry with me. And just that tiny little thing, you know, changed the course of everything for me. So that's pretty cool.
So I have to disagree with Debbie. That is not pretty cool. That is amazingly cool. Why? What a great story. First of all, you might wonder, like, why was she shooting that from her car? And the reason is that, so I knew about this story, and I said, would you tell a story? And she said, I would love to tell a story. In fact, I'm going to Yellowstone and to go hiking, and I want to do it from there. And so she was leaving on Friday. She said, Saturday morning, I'll do it. So she filmed this yesterday morning, hoping to be, like, out in Yellowstone. She said, but there's, like, 30-mile-an-hour winds, and you wouldn't be able to hear anything. So she was stuck in her car. That's just how much that all filter. But, you know, what she's telling us here, and lots of takeaways, of course, but remind yourself that more is possible than what you know. And then run with it, okay? So I think so often, you know, hope or our ability, like, what we reach for is restricted by, this is what's been true so far, therefore what else could be different? And there is different out there. There are possibilities out there. Discover them and run with them. And I just think that's kind of an amazing thing to have.
It is. I brought my rope along, because when I look back on all these stories that we've been sharing, if you think of each one of them, you can really see the hope was in some kind of connection, right? Mm-hmm. Connection with the land, connection with the person at the bus stop, connection between a grandmother and grandson, on a postcard. And I think that hope, every time I type it on my text this week, it's a capital H. And I think that capital H hope exists in between us the most and in our connections. And so when we don't know what else to do, like, starting there, mm-hmm. or jumping.
So I think, or jumping. So, yeah, I think, what's the takeaway about this? You know, we've sort of dissected hope for 4 weeks, and today we're just sort of sitting in some of those stories. So note your stories of hope. You have them. Look for them. Discover them. Remember them. Tell them to others. Thank people for the hope that you picked up from something in their life so that they can realize that. You know, like Tammy had this thing of hope that was working inside her, but was very unconscious until she saw the question. All of a sudden, it all popped together, and she realized it. But that had been working in her all along. So let those unconscious things also come to consciousness. think about them, celebrate them. Like Melissa said, those experiences of hope aren't just weavings, but those are the knots, right? That's why we recall them. They kind of hold things together. We can hold on to them. We can share them. We can tell those stories. And let's continue to do that. And
you can be hopeful people. So yeah. Much storytellers. And all of you have this, right? All of you have this power. Yeah. So
keep telling us your stories. Find ways to share them and give us a chance to share them for you as well.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.